And welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on the program, contributor Charles Greenfield speaks with Mark Hart, executive and artistic director of the Coral Gables Congregational United Church of Christ Community Arts Programs, long name, 2013 Summer Concert Series. Judith Bishop covers present and future exhibitions at the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale with their Director of Exhibitions and Curatorial Services, Rachel Talent Ivers. Chef Norman Van Aken returns with a word on food, and our Broward Arts calendar features Jody Horn-Leschinski, Community Development Director of the Broward Cultural Division. An alliance of theatrical organizations and professionals dedicated to nurturing, promoting, and advocating for the growth and prestige of the South Florida theater industry, the South Florida Theater League continues its important mission so that all types of theater flourishes here in our area. They recently launched their Summer Theater Fest, sponsored by WLRN, which includes their Summer Theater Fest play reading series, and brings back their free night of theater. With us today, with all the exciting details, is the Theater League's Executive Director, Ms. Andy Arthur. And Andy, welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited.
Now, tell me a little bit about the Theater League, the South Florida Theater League, about 58, 59 theaters involved of all different types.
All different types, from the really big, like the Adrian Arsh Center, the Broward Center for Performing Arts, to the really small, such as Thinking Cap Theater, Crashbox Theater Company, theaters that operated in 35-seat venues. So,
Theater over the last several years has been a little rough. Theater groups coming and going, but not too many, thank goodness. Give us a state of local theater.
We're actually growing. It's surprising. Right. There's a lot of great of little teeny tiny groups that are just fringe groups that are starting to get up to prominence. For example, there's Thinking Cap Theater that just did a production of The Rover that was really exciting this past spring. And there's just lots of little things that are coming up. Slow Burn Theater that's doing musical theater that's now going to also – it does musical theater in Boca. It's moving to Aventura as well. It's there are a lot of new companies, which is really great.
Now, on that topic, you have brought together a new theater company. I think that's really gutsy in this day and age, this economic environment. Wow, it seems like a tall mountain to climb.
It's pretty big. My theater company is called Lost Girls Theater, and we're trying to create a theater of wonder that incorporates magic, puppetry, film, dance, as many different things as you can into the theatrical setting, and really connecting with the sense of wonder that you had as a kid. So we like fairy tales, science fiction, fantasy. We're going to do a play reading as part of the Summer Theater Fest reading series that spoofs on Nancy Drew, a play of mine called The Secret of the Biological Clock.
Wow. So. Well, good luck with that. Good
Thank
luck
you.
With that. Now, let's get into the specifics here. The latest Summer Theater Fest is underway, and how many years have you all endeavored in this?
We've been doing a version of the Summer Theater Fest. This is the second year it's been in the summer, but we've been doing a version of it for the past 7 years, because it started the year before I got here. Mm-hmm. So I've been with the Theater League for 6 years. So
Now, describe that, and I'm glad it involves a lot of different venues.
Tons of different venues. We just started with the Summer Theater Fest reading series. So every Monday, at least one theater company, sometimes at two, there will be a reading of a play by a local playwright. We have 18 readings overall. We just had one on June 3rd, but the rest are yet to come. We have Get in Bed with the Arts, which is we've actually built a twin size bed that will be going to 13 different theater companies throughout the summer every Thursday, excepting for tonight. We'll be at the Adrian Arts Center. It's our only Friday performance. And the bed has, you know, our logo on the footboard, Get in Bed with the Arts on the headboard, a map of where all the different theaters are as the bedspread. And we're going to interview patrons in bed. and ask them, hey, what did the arts mean to you? Did you have some meaningful experience with the arts as a kid? It really allowed patrons to tell us what excites them about the arts. And because I think sometimes people in the community forget how exciting and how much we love what we do and how much our patrons love what we do. And we want to start that.
Now, you're going to launch that video on YouTube?
Yes, we will.
Wonderful.
All the videos will be posted on YouTube.
Great fun. It's either heaven or hell.
That is
super. So the Summer Theater Fest continues through?
We close on August 31st. Technically, actually, we close on September 1st because we're going to be the bat bed will go in the Coconut Grove bed race at the very end of the summer.
And I understand you need volunteers for that, don't you?
If someone's a runner and wants to run and be in the Coconut Grove bed race, contact me.
And that number is 954-557-0778. And, of course, more information on the internet at southfloridatheater.com. So you got your Theater Fest running through early September. And the play reading series is something new that you all...
This is the first time we've done this.
Uh-huh.
It's something we wanted to do so we could write a little bit of programming to make the fest seem more cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
And readings are a great way for local patrons to see, hey, I might try something new. And just also see, we have so many playwrights down here.
Really?
There's a bunch of them.
Elaborate on that, if you would.
Well, we have 18 readings, so at least 18 different playwrights, and even mm-hmm. some of the really respected playwrights in the community, for whatever reason, couldn't be in the series. But we have Carbonell winning playwrights in this. We have brand new up-and-coming playwrights. There's a lot of writing and really cool activity going on.
Mostly from the kids graduating from college down here? Or do we have an influx of people moving into the area?
We have an influx of people moving into the area. We have people who have been here for a while. Like, some of the readings are by sort of established playwrights like Christopher Demas Brown and Juan Sanchez. Some are brand new. Like, one's by Edward Excalibur. And he's a recent graduate at FIU. And he's going places. he's really, really smart, and his playwriting's really, really exciting. And but you know, brand new people. It's really a great mix of playwrights. So there's something new and exciting and different for everyone.
You're a playwright, and is that a hard process? It seems like you would find a lot of support with the Theater League down here and the South Florida theater environment. But do you face a lot of obstacles?
Getting seen. One of the reasons I started Lost Girls Theater was because the type of theater that I write isn't necessarily the right fit for the type of theaters that I work for at the league.
Mm.
Like, they all vary to different missions, so it's trying to find the right match.
Mm-hmm.
We have wonderful support in Miami-Dade County Cultural Affairs. They have a program called the Playwright Development Program, which nurtures playwrights, and it's fantastic. So if there are any playwrights listening, you can contact me on that one as well, because it's a great program. It's, you know, that there is a community of support down here. This community is really, really takes care of its own.
Let's move on to your free night of theater. What's all that about?
A free night of theater was originally a program created by the Theater Communications Group, but we're now running it as part of Summerfest Free Night. You can go to summerfestfreenight.southfloridatheater.com. Or you can go to southfloridatheater.com and click to Summerfest Free Night.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 theater companies are giving over 200 tickets away in a lottery. We have two different lotteries set up, so you can enter to win tickets to up to three different theater companies.
Wow. Can you mention those?
Yes, I can. Actors Playhouse at the Miracle Theater, Fort Lauderdale Children's Theater, Gable Stage, Lake Worth Playhouse, Mad Cat Theater Company, Malt's Jupiter Theater, Palm Beach Drama Works, Soul Children's Theater, and Story Crafter Studio.
So your efforts cover four counties, coincidentally WLRN's broadcast area. And Summer Lean, tell me about theater in Monroe County. Not too much, unfortunately.
Not a lot, but it is growing. We do have – there's a couple new members from Monroe County have joined this past year.
Mm.
There's Ginsburg Productions, which is operating on Key Largo. There's Theater XP, which will be doing a reading in the Summer Theater Fest reading series. And they're in Key West. Key West Fringe is another one. So there's a little bit, but it is kind of spread out. But it's growing. It's bubbling.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. When we read an article about yet another theater closing. That's very sad. But there are new births. Continually evolving. Now, how can our South Florida WLRN listeners help you all out? Do you need volunteers for any for the bed race you mentioned? But
bed
any
race
other,
would be great. If you're not a runner, I'm currently looking for volunteers for Buck Fever by Juan Sanchez's reading on June 17th.
Hmm.
I need a volunteer. It's going to be at
would
the
they Keith. Be acting on st- what would
they would
be
not
doing?
Be acting. It's going to be at the Young Arts Foundation, so it's in the old Bacardi building, and we need people to help tell people where to park because they're not necessarily really know where it is, and you'd be able to stay for the reading, and I would give you a free Theater League t-shirt. So.
Oh, isn't that nice? Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
So our listeners can help you volunteer-wise. How about membership? What does the South Florida Theater League, how do they deal with members, and you need members?
Our primary members are both local artists, so if you're an actor, a playwright, a designer, a director, you can join the Theater League as an individual member. And as individual members, you receive information about upcoming auditions. We're going to actually have unified auditions for all the theater companies come together and watch auditioners in August. We do sort of events throughout the year where people can sort of meet other arts practitioners.
Mm.
We do workshops. We did a workshop just recently at the Deering Estate on viewpoints, which is a type of way of looking at acting and directing as opposed to the traditional Stanislavski technique. So there's lots of little things you can be a part of and connect with the community.
That's marvelous. Well, what's in the future for the South Florida Theater League? Can you give us any tip as to...
I want us to grow. our big thing that I really would love to get off the ground, and I know my board would as well, is we eventually love to have a space which would include a collective scene shop. And a collective sort of storage space as well as maybe rehearsal space for everyone to sort of pull all our resources together to lift the burden off individual theater companies.
That would have to be a big, big warehouse, I dare say.
Yeah. I'd say it's an easy goal. But
well, I'm thinking of the scenery that rumor has it is just deteriorating in the Coconut Grove Playhouse, and that's a shame. That's a whole history of decades of great theater here in South Florida. Well, Andy, Arthur, big things for you all coming up in the future for the South Florida Theater League and your Summer Theater Fest and the play reading series and the free night of theater. For more information, you can call Andy to perhaps even volunteer at 954-557-0778 or go online to find out more info, southfloridatheater.com. And thank you so much for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Later on our program, contributor Judith Bishop previews future exhibitions coming to the Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale. Chef Norman Van Aken whips up a word on food, and Jody Horn-Leschinski delivers her Broward Arts Calendar.
With a song in my heart, I behold your adorable face. Just a song at the start, but it soon is a hymn to your grace. When the music swells, I'm touching your hand. It tells that you're standing here.
It's that time of the year again when the 28th annual Summer Concert Series fills a beautiful church in Coral Gables with the sounds of excellent jazz and classical music. Charles Greenfield has the details.
The Coral Gables Congregational Church at 3010 DeSoto Boulevard displays its stunning Spanish Revival 1924 facade just opposite the landmark Biltmore Hotel. In terms of cultural activities, the Spanish colonial-style sanctuary has dominated the summer season for over two decades with its sparkling concert series. In 2002, the 450-seat church, listed in the National Registry of Historic Buildings, started a conservatory for the arts for talented but financially challenged Miami-Dade County youth. The conservatory offers one-on-one instrument training, studies in music theory, juried evaluations, performance forums with artists, and public performance opportunities. While the Conservatory for the Arts, or CAP, provides an after-school curriculum, young musicians can find several training performing ensembles throughout the community. Teachers are recruited from stellar sources like the New World Symphony and the University of Miami Frost School of Music. CAP has received the Children's Cultural Coalition's Artist Impact Award that recognizes achievement in the arts for children and families. Best of all, the Young Musicians Summer Master Classes offer an extraordinary opportunity for young musicians to interact with the artists appearing during the summer series. Recently, I spoke to Coral Gables Congregational Church's artistic director, Mark Hart, about its exciting 28th Community Arts Program 2013 Summer Concert Series, its artists, and the programs that will be performed. Mark Hart, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you, Charles. It's good to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Remind us briefly about the Coral Gables Congregational Church's mission statement in terms of its relationship with the arts and the general community.
Well, the mission statement to the Coral Gables Congregational United Church of Christ Community Arts Program is to serve a diverse community by providing educational and culturally enriching experiences through the transforming power of the arts. So what that means in a nutshell is basically that we believe in the arts as a vehicle to the spirituality and to one's greater connection to that, whatever form that may be for each person.
Now, how do you account for the fact that the Coral Gables Congregational Church basically dominates the summer cultural arts concert series after 28 years? With the exception of the Arts Center, you light up the summer sky.
Well, thank you. I can't tell you how pleased I am to hear that. And I would hope that it's because that we offer a very high quality product with some of the great artists that are out there, and in a much smaller venue that's much more intimate, and people can get a very up-close and personal perspective to the concerts and the music.
Well, we're going to get to the specific concerts in a moment, but tell us about the work your organization does with youth and its outreach music education program.
Well, one of the parts of the community arts program, in addition to the summer concert series, is the Conservatory for the Arts, which, as a matter of fact, in this year, 2013, is in its 10th year. And we provide a curriculum to the children of South Florida, which accentuates music education. And the ways that we do that is through Saturday music classes, where we provide teaching on all the instruments and performance practice and evaluations through a number of ways, through such conservatory methods as juries and whatnot. And then also we give them a very well-rounded curriculum in music theory as part of the Saturday music classes. Then on Thursday evenings, we do our ensemble performances, our ensemble practice with our students, which comprise a young musician's junior and intermediate orchestra, as well as an advanced chamber orchestra and our all-star jazz ensemble. And this next year, we're adding a jazz prep band as well to that curriculum.
Well, your first summer concert is on June 13th. It starts with jazz vocalist Catherine Russell. She's the daughter of Louis Armstrong's long-term musical director, Louis Russell. That makes for jazz royalty, as far as I can see. And she has the 2012 Prix du Jazz from the Jazz Academy in France. Who is she? And obviously, she has a great background.
Well, who she is, I think, as far as what people really need to know, is the fact that she, as you say, she has won that recognition in France for her album Strictly Romancin', but also the fact that she is also a Grammy Award winning artist, but she's just a fantastic singer and a great communicator in the jazz and blues vein, and just a very, very pleasant and sweet voice that tells a great story with great music and great musicality. And upon listening to it, what I see it this cross-section between Billie Holiday and Sarah Vaughan, the lyricism of Billie Holiday and the depths of Sarah Vaughan.
That sounds pretty darn good to me. On June 27th, pianist Orly Shaham, a sister of famed violinist Gil Shaham, plays Chopin, Brahms, and what you describe as a, quote, a unique presentation of Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition.
Yes, Orly Shaham, the sister of violinist Gil Shaham and his accompanist, she's got a great program lined up for us, and as you say, which includes a very unique presentation of Mussorgsky's pictures at an exhibition. What we're doing with, as we're providing a multimedia presentation of actually pictures that may have been some of the pictures that led Mussorgsky and inspired him of the work of Victor Hartmann during that exhibition back in the 19th century and inspired those pieces of music for Mussorgsky. And it's going to be part of a multimedia presentation while she's playing the composition.
Well, you seem to be picking a lot of well-known musical families this season. And once again, on July 11th, world-recognized guitarist Pepe Romero, his brothers are Angel and Celine. I hear that Pepe is on a world tour.
Yes, he is. He's on a world tour, particularly touting the music of his father, Celedonio Romero, and his compositions and paying tribute to his father throughout this world tour. And he'll be performing compositions of Celedonio Romero on this concert on July 11, along with some other works that he touts, early works and works that were written specifically for him.
And a classical repertoire.
Yes, a classical repertoire.
Now, if anyone appreciates jazz, the name Brubeck should, I think, ring a bell. The late, great Dave Brubeck has two sons, Chris and Dan. And they're coming down on July 25th. One plays drums, the other electric bass, I think.
Yes, yes. Chris and Dan Brubeck, the sons of Dave Brubeck, who we unfortunately lost last December. Dan on the drums and Chris on the electric bass and trombone, two guys that really are just terrific at what they do. They really forged their musical taste in the 1960s and have a bit of that sound within their performances, and are also on this summer concert series paying tribute to their father, Dave Brubeck, in some of the music they're doing as well on July 25. So that should be quite a very nice concert with a loving tribute to their father, Dave Brubeck.
And I believe the guitarist is Mike D'Amico and pianist Chuck Lamb.
Yes, that's right. So it's the Brubeck Brothers Quartet.
And probably should be a sellout.
Yes, well, ticket sales for that are well underway, and so I would advise anyone that wants tickets to that to get them as soon as possible.
And August 8th brings the Alan Baylock Jazz Orchestra with veterans from the Woody Herman Orchestra, which I may add my mother, Dr. Ruth Greenfield, brought to Gusman Hall many years ago. But tell us quickly about that.
Well, Alan Baylock is one of these artists that is just a terrific writer as well as a band leader. And his ingenious reharmonizations and imaginative melodic, tonal, and rhythmic expressions throughout his compositions and his writing really bring a lot of his own works and also adaptations and rearrangements of existing works to a whole new level. And it's really exhilarating and to hear his compositions and his arrangements through what he does with the Alan Baylock Jazz Orchestra. So that definitely is another concert, as they all are, concerts not to be missed.
And then the final concert, I believe, is John Pizzarelli.
Yes, no, there's a familiar name, I think, to everybody. John Pizzarelli, the great jazz guitarist and singer, who will be coming with his brother, Martin Pizzarelli, in this concert of music from the Great American Songbook and some jazz standards.
And that date, real quickly?
That date is August 22nd. He closes out our summer concert series this year.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you so much, Mark Hart, for joining us on South Florida Arts Beat.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
The Coral Gables Congregational Church Community Arts Program truly dominates the summer season here in South Florida. When other music series play it safe with fall, winter, early spring season runs, the CGCC takes the seemingly unproductive summer months and has built up a large, expanding audience for over 28 years. Most of their success hinges on the unerring choice of artists, both classical and jazz players, who are established and in some cases on the cusp of successful careers. It's certainly a major treat for South Florida residents during the region's least comfortable season of the year. For ticket information, call 305-448-7421, extension 153, or go to communityartsprogram.org. And call soon, as these concerts sell out quickly. For South Florida Arts Beat, I'm Charles Greenfield.
You can email Charles Greenfield at cdgpm@bellsouth.net. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat continues in just a moment. You're listening to South Florida Arts Beat here on 91.3 WLRN and 91.5 WKWM. Hello, Ed Bell with you. Coming up on the program, Chef Norman Van Aken serves up a word on food, and our Broward Arts calendar features Jody Horn-Lachinsky with enticing event information for your consideration. Now, our contributor Judith Bishop takes a look at the Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale, to consider current and upcoming exhibitions.
The Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale has a decades-long history in South Florida. The latest chapter began in 1986 when its current building opened to the public. The museum has a permanent collection of 6,000 pieces, including works by William Glackens. Glackens was an American realist painter and co-founder of the Ashcan movement. Other highlights of the permanent collection are paintings by European artists from the Cobra School. That movement takes its name from three European capitals where it was centered: Copenhagen, Brussels, and Amsterdam. Currently, another area of expansion is their photography collection, as the museum augments its contemporary works. In addition, the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale presents exhibits that span time and genre. Several years ago, they won the right to exhibit an impressive King Tut collection. That show drew visitors from around the country and around the world. In 2008, the museum forged an alliance with Nova Southeastern University that continues today. Our guest this afternoon on South Florida Arts Beat is Rachel Ivers. She is Director of Exhibitions and Curatorial Services. Rachel, welcome to South Florida Arts Beat. Let's talk first about your permanent collection. William Glackens, a pivotal figure in 20th century American art and one of the co-founders of the Ashcan School, is central to your permanent collection. Tell us about the works of Glackens that you have and how significant they are in his overall catalog of paintings.
We have close to 500 works by William Glackens, but we also have works by his circle of peers, people who were in the Eight and also in the Ashcan, including Robert Henry, Ernest Lawson, George Lukes, Everett Shin, Maurice Prendergast, and John Sloan. We have the largest and most comprehensive collection of William Glackens in the U.S., and among those, we have several key works in his career. They're a good part of that.
So you are the museum of record for his works, and you are putting together a major exhibition that's going to travel after
it leaves
South Florida.
We are. Actually, it's being curated by Avis Berman, who's a noted Glackens scholar, and it's being co-organized with the Barnes Foundation in Philadelphia, as well as the Parrish Art Museum. And it opens at the Museum of Art in Fort Lauderdale in February of 2014. Then it travels to the Parrish in the summer and then opens.
And that's in Southampton.
Southampton, yes. Then the Barnes Foundation in Philadelphia, it opens in November of 2014. And it's the first time in close to, I would say, almost 50 years that there's been a major survey of his work. And it will include just over 100 pieces from 50 institutional collections, as well as a handful of private collections. And it's a very exciting time for us. We're proud to have the opportunity to do that.
It's terrific for people in South Florida, and it's also terrific for your museum, because that's a lot of prestige to put together a show like that and to have it widely circulated in other parts of the country.
It is. We were thrilled to have the opportunity to collaborate with the Barnes, especially. And the project's been funded by the Henry Luce Foundation, which for us was very prestigious, as well as the Sanson Foundation. And the Museum of Art is also the repository of the Glackens estate as far as the ephemera, the archival records, and his studies and different family-related documents. So we just received a grant from the NEA to support the implementation of a study center within our gallery and within the collections area of the museum. So it's a really fantastic time to be working at the museum.
Another key element of your permanent collection would be the Cobra paintings. For listeners who might be unfamiliar with that movement, who are the most prominent artists?
The key artists are Carl Appel, Oscar Jorn, Constant Cornaya. The name Cobra is an acronym for the founding cities that these artists came from, which is Copenhagen, Brussels, and Amsterdam. And it emerged following World War II. In post-war Europe, when supplies were in very, very short supply to create their works. So they worked often with whatever they could find, and they drew their inspiration from very non-traditional sources, non-Western art, the art of children from folk art. Also, Nordic mythology played a really large role in their work. And their belief was that art should be more egalitarian, that it was not elitist, and that everyone had the ability to express themselves artistically, that it wasn't just for a few people. It was a very optimistic movement and very spontaneous and exuberant, and it was all about that instinctual response that people have within themselves. The Cobra movement formally only lasted 3 years, but it had a very wide-ranging influence, and the artists continued to work in what we now consider the Cobra style or the Cobra vein all the way through the 70s. So it was actually a very long, long movement.
And looking out to the fall, you're mm-hmm. going to have a special exhibition. Of
right,
Cobra
right. We actually, November 8th, which was the day that they actually issued their manifesto in Paris in 1948, we're going to open the Spirit of Cobra, which is intended to serve as an introduction to the South Florida community. We do have the largest collection of Cobra work in the U.S., and we've partnered with the Cobra Museum of Modern Art in Amstelveen, which is just outside Amsterdam, to create this exhibition, and it's the first in a series of three that we're going to be doing over the next several years that are specific to Cobra.
You have a photography exhibition that mm-hmm. has South Florida written all over it. It's Bunny Yeager's work.
Yes. This is curated by Peter Boswell, who's our curator at large. And Bunny Yeager is known as a pinup photographer, but she herself was a pinup model. And she got into photography a way to support herself. She began photographing herself, creating self-portraits. So she really sort of took the camera out of the hands of the male photographer and turned it on herself. And she's also, in addition to being a model, she's credited with basically launching Betty Page's career in 1954. She did a really well-known photo shoot here in Miami of Betty Page that became some of her best-known work.
And Bunny Yeager, of course, is well into her 80s.
She is.
And she's had an incredible renaissance at this stage in her life.
She has. She's very, very vibrant still.
You also have some Cuban paintings. Mm-hmm. How significant is that part of your collection, and which artists in particular do you concentrate on?
We consider it one of our core collections. We collect a fairly broad range. We've expanded from Cuban work to other Latin American artists as well, but we did start off with the core Cuban collection. Jose Beria is one of our key figures, of course. We recently acquired Cacho, which we were really excited about. That's actually in an exhibition at the Museum of Art and Design in New York right now, the boat that we have. And we also have Maria Martinez Cañas, Ana Mendieta, Emilio Filaro, Sandra Ramos.
Pablo Cano,
yes.
Summer, just mm-hmm. around the corner. You have a lot of events on the calendar, classes and events for both adults and children. What are some of the highlights of your summer program?
We have the Audenation Academy of Art and Design, which operates year-round, but in the summer we do offer a summer camp for children. And the disciplines they can choose from include painting, drawing, printmaking, digital arts, and one of the more popular classes right now is character development, which they can learn to create characters for gaming, for animation, for graphic novels, and that's one of the newer offerings, and it's proving to be one of the more popular. We also have classes.
That's a sign of the times.
Yeah.
You are with the times on that one.
Also ceramics and textiles. We also have a Books and Books franchise within the museum, so there are always book signings throughout the summer, throughout the year. And we do offer monthly wine tastings, which are the fourth Thursday of every month, and those are really popular.
It sounds like a busy calendar.
It is.
Thank you for taking time to speak with us today, Rachel.
Thank you.
The Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale is located at No. 1 East Las Olas Boulevard. It's open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., Thursdays until 7, and Sundays from 12 noon until 5. For additional information, you can telephone 954-525-5500 or log on to their website, moafl.org. For South Florida Arts Beat, this is Judith Bishop.
Judith Bishop is a television journalist and executive producer who has covered breaking news, politics, and the arts for WABC and CNBC. She has produced documentaries for WNET and is currently a contributor to WLRN-TV, Channel 17. Please stay with us. South Florida Arts Beat will continue in just a moment. Welcome back to South Florida Arts Beat. Ed Bell with you. It's quite an honor for us to include the renowned chef Norman Van Aken on the show. Here's his segment, A Word on Food.
I don't want French fried potatoes, red ripe tomatoes. I'm never satisfied. I want the frim-fram sauce with the aus and fade, with shafafa on the side. Shoot-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Hi, I'm Norman Van Aken, and welcome to A Word on Food. Today's word on food is chorizo. Most everyone knows, but I will say it for the unbaptized, chorizo is a kind of sausage. The first time I remember seeing chorizo was back in my hometown of Diamond Lake, Illinois, in 1965 or so. It was around that time that many Mexican families began to immigrate to the area. They worked very hard, founding a close-knit neighborhood, which eventually became part of the broader patchwork quilt that epitomizes so much of North America now. The chorizo I saw then was in a little groceria called El Barrio. We entered the store, and I must admit, my unsophisticated Midwestern nose was more than a little daunted by the foreign smells. A score of dried chilies hung in festively colored bags. To my untrained eye, they looked like licorice, tree bark, and misshapen inedible ornaments. Cheeses I'd never heard of lay marked and gleaming white in a cooler. The fragrance of cumin seemed to conquer all else. My mother bought a burstingly plump package of chorizo. She explained how wonderful it would be when her Mexican friend Linda, from the restaurant where they both worked, cooked us scrambled eggs in tortillas with it. Mama was from New York City, and nothing seemed foreign or odd to her when it came to the foods of the world. Finding the origin of a particular kind of sausage is daunting detective work, mostly because humans have been preserving meat for sustenance for so long. In the aftermath of the European Black Plague, sausages began to pick up in popularity. People realized that fresh meat could stay fresh only so long. They were loath to throw it out, of course. Starvation was real and all too common during that time. By using techniques such as curing, salting, smoking, and drying, meat could be made to last much longer. Catalonia is the probable birth home of chorizo, though without the contributions of peppers from Central and South America, they would not have the distinctive peppers of modern chorizo. When the Spanish invaded Mexico, they brought pigs, and eventually chorizo became emblematic of Mexican foods as well, which led to my experience with Linda's eggs, or, as she intoned for me, huevos con chorizo. I decided I liked Linda as much as I liked the huevos. The Spanish version of chorizo is different from Mexico's, primarily due to Spain's much longer aging process. Spanish chorizo is more like salami, harder and smokier, while the Mexican sausage that is generally enjoyed is akin to a fresh Italian sausage, juicier and spicier. I incorporate a Mexican adobo paste in my recipe for chorizo. I work it into dishes like my caldo gallego soup and no-roux black bean gumbo. A few years ago, we flew to Boston to cook a charity dinner. Five other chefs from all over the country joined me on a six-course dinner. Guests paid $600 per plate, so this was an upscale event, to say the least. One of the chefs was the late great Frenchman Jean-Louis Paladin. Jean-Louis cooked a course of cod with white beans, a white bean consommé, and he topped the fish with a dried crust of cooked chorizo. You may be surprised that such a famous French master would cook with this lusty sausage of Spanish and Mexican heritage. I think Linda would have loved it. I'm Norman Van Aken, and that's my word on food.
Norman Van Aken is the author of My Key West Kitchen and is also the director of restaurants for the Miami Culinary Institute and Tuyo in downtown Miami. Please tune in this coming Saturday morning at 8:34 on Weekend Edition to hear Big Steak. And here's our South Florida Arts Beat Entertainment Calendar. And today we welcome back Jody Horn-Leschinski, Community Development Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Great to have you back with us, Jody.
Thank you. It's always good to be back.
And let's hear about the excitement going on in Broward County.
Well, in Broward County, we are celebrating our artists right now, and 24 Broward County artists will be selected through a call-to-artist application process to attend a one-day You Are Your Brand workshop, which is going to be facilitated by a Golden Globe winner and Emmy-nominated TV writer and producer. And whether you know it or not, The moment you enter a room, people form an opinion about you. You Are Your Brand workshop will engage artists in a series of innovative exercises designed to help them discover what they project and how others perceive them. There will be a series of free informational sessions to prepare Broward's performing media artists, writers, musicians, dancers, and visual artists for this opportunity. If you visit broward.org/arts, you can get more details. Seraphic Fire, that happens to be one of our grantees, has continued its long-standing tradition of digital success with the ensemble's latest album, Seraphic Fire, and it reached number 10 on the iTunes Classical chart on the first day of its release. And this album contains many of their world premieres and signature works that define the ensemble's first decade. Broward Cultural Division is proud to introduce Florida Grand Opera's newest member of their team, Julie Mikowski, as the Director of Artistic Administration and the Head of Young Artist Program. She is a dedicated artist, teacher, and an administrator, and she has led a life immersed in music and is a self-professed opera and pedagogy fanatic. And she has spent the last 7 years in the field of development, most recently at the Sarasota Opera and also the Arizona Opera. So we welcome her to the neighborhood. Between Memorial Day and Labor Day, active duty military personnel and their families are invited to attend 6 museums in Broward County free of charge. The National Endowment for the Arts and Blue Star Families have partnered to promote the Blue Star 2013 Museum Program to say thank you to these dedicated men and women who are risking their lives on behalf of all Americans. The participating museums are the Art and Culture Center of Hollywood, Bonnet House, Coral Springs Museum of Art, Stranahan House, the International Swimming Hall of Fame Museum, and the Museum of Art Fort Lauderdale. And of course, this weekend, there are plenty of things to keep you busy. You can explore your own inner wild thing at Young at Art Museum during Where the Wild Things Are. Maurice Sendak, in his own words and pictures, a national traveling exhibition that opens at Young at Art on Saturday and continues through September. Where the Wild Things Are is an engaging exhibition and interactive exploration of iconic images and characters from one of Maurice Sendak's most beloved books. So if music is what you're looking for, the South Florida Jazz presents Kurt Elling on Saturday at the Mineachi Center for the Performing Arts at 8 p.m. There are no obvious parallels in the music industry. Chicago native, Kurt Elling is the greatest jazz singer of our time, a master of vocalese and scatting. Remarkably, each of his 9 albums was nominated for a Grammy Award and Dedicated to You won in 2010. You can become part of history as the original Fort Lauderdale Gay Men's Chorus presents its 27th season finale concert, a Gala Old Time, celebrating the 30th anniversary of Gala Choruses, which stands for the Gay and Lesbian Association of Choruses. This musical walk through history will be directed by Dr. Gary Keating, the founder of the chorus 26 years ago. Highlights include some of the most popular pieces sung by America's Gala Choruses over the last 30 years, music that has stood the test of time. The concert will be held Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Museum of Art, Fort Lauderdale. Miramar Cultural Center hosts the exhibition Caribbean Canvases and Frames now through July 12th at the Anson Family Art Gallery. Caribbean countries have always been known for their visually stunning works of art reflecting timeless moments from their respective islands. Featured artists include Philippe Dodard, Cecil Cooper, Peter Wayne Lewis, Carl Jerry Craig, Turgot Bastien, Franklin Finian, photojournalist Carl Just, and lifestyle photographer David I. Muir. The Museum of Discovery and Science presents Tony Hawk Rad Science, the exhibit that places students into the role of skateboarders and scientists, providing them with the physics and fundamentals of extreme sports. Witness the first time Tony Hawk performed the 900 and learn the science behind this trick in the Vert Theater, just one of the 25 exciting exhibits that make up Tony Hawk's Rad Science. Students will also learn about laws of physics with the Bodacious Board Balancing, where they can test their own balance with classic skateboard tricks with a padded surface, of course. From Saturday through September 1st, the Art and Culture Center of Hollywood presents the Pop Culture in Peanuts exhibit, which features 70 original cartoon strips by the legendary Charles Schulz. This is a rare chance to see the originals, not reproductions, by a true American original. Also on Saturday is the Snoopy Jazz Party, including Peanuts-themed music provided by South Florida jazz legend Joe Donato, a cartooning discussion and demonstrations, prizes and raffles, a Snoopy doghouse, and Snoopy's favorite snack, chocolate chip cookies and root beer. Throughout the month of June, 17 cultural attractions have partnered to offer reciprocal membership during Broward Attractions and Museums Month, or BAM. Members of any one of the 17 participating cultural institutions are entitled to free general admission to all participating venues during the month of June. Special events may not be included. Join one and experience them all, and you can see more on their website. If you would like more detailed cultural event information, please visit artscalendar.com, Broward County's complete guide to arts and culture. Never miss a thing. Get there.
Always bringing us great arts information, that's Jody Horn-Leshinsky, Community Development Director of the Broward Cultural Division. Jody, thanks so much for all of that great info. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Ed, and you too.
Please tune in for Il Volo's We Are Love on WLRN-TV Channel 17 this weekend, Saturday and Sunday at 9. You can pledge for tickets to see Il Volo's Miami concert performance this coming fall. That's Il Volo Saturday and Sunday night on WLRN-TV Channel 17. Paul Marcellini's Meet Your Biscayne Neighbors, an exhibition of photographs of Biscayne National Park wildlife, opens to the public today in the park's Dante Fussell Visitor Center Gallery. A Meet the Artist reception will be held this Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. at the gallery, located at 9700 Southwest 328th Street. That's 9 miles east of Homestead. The show is open daily from 9 to 4:30 through September 2nd. Admission is free. And for more info, go to meetyourneighbors.net. We'll rebroadcast South Florida Arts Beat tonight and every Friday night at 7 o'clock on our WLRN Extra HD channel. You can tune in on your HD radio or go to our beautiful website at WLRN.org for more information. And that's today's edition of South Florida Arts Beat. We hope you enjoyed the show. Adrian Kennedy is our executive producer. I'm Ed Bell, producer and host. Our theme was composed by Mike Levine and performed by Mike and Sam Levine. Special thanks to our technical director today, Andy Wagner, and we'd like to thank our contributors as well, Charles Greenfield, Judith Bishop, Norman Van Aken, and Jody Horn-Leshinsky. Please call us with your comments, 305-995-2258. You can fax us at 305-995-2221 or email us your event information to info@WLRN.org. We'd like to hear from you. Monday at this time, Topical Currents with hosts Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, Monday at 1 o'clock. Have yourself a great weekend, and please, as always, keep your dial set right here to 91.3 WLRN, South Florida's NPR news station, and 91.5 WKWM, NPR for the Florida Keys. Until next time, this is Ed Bell saying bye-bye. Enjoy.